that's right. Boy, am I lucky here today. I have Congressman Jeff Duncan on the line with us today. We've got, how you doing today, Jeff?
Well, I'm doing okay today, Ann. Thanks for having me on.
Absolutely. Hey, I want to talk just a little bit about the debate, and then I want to talk about that new resolution that you've introduced. But did you watch the debate last night, Jeff?
I did, and it was the most entertaining debate of all of them so far.
Yeah, I think when they're trying to put the captioned across the bottom and they can't even get it up because there's too many people talking that they gave up the interpreting what was being said. That was pretty hard to believe that they would take it to that level. But I know that you are of course last week when Cruz was here in town, Senator Cruz, you are endorsing Senator Cruz. How did you feel Senator Cruz did last night, Jeff?
I thought he did real well. I thought Marco Rubio did real well. I thought them putting Donald Trump between the two was a great optic for actually what happened. He was being hit from both sides. And I just thought it was a good performance by both Rubio and Cruz. And, you know, Cruz was talking to his Texas crowd. That's the home crowd for him. So you could tell he felt very comfortable on that stage with that crowd last night.
Yeah, and but there has been some issues with Cruz on the lying, some of this dirty-handed type thing. How do you respond to people about that?
Well, I mean, there's zero evidence about that he's told any lies or done anything underhanded. Look, I would say he's a man of integrity. I've watched him. And we'll go back to the Iowa pre-caucus tweets. And caucuses are different than primaries. But so you had an overzealous campaign staff who saw a CNN program, mm-hmm. which, if you watched the first part of CNN, it truly made you believe that Carson was giving up the race after this Iowa caucuses. They tweeted that out. Ted Cruz was preparing his speech, getting ready to speak before a large caucus there in Iowa, and didn't have anything to do with it. But in the true Eisenhower fashion, he said the buck stops here. He took blame for what his staffers had done without his knowledge, and he openly on the stage apologized to Ben Carson. Now, that tells me that that's a person of integrity. He didn't blame anybody. He took responsibility for himself, and he apologized for it, and then they moved on because he had other states to win. He had other things to do,
sure.
And to him, this wasn't that big of an issue. But, you know, all this stuff last week where he was called a liar, there was zero substantiated facts. He had any involvement in a fake Facebook page. I mean, heck, I could make a fake Facebook page in about 5 minutes. Mm-hmm. Anyone could do that. There was zero evidence that the Cruz camp was involved in that. So he was blamed for photoshopping a picture. Well, every picture used on a mailer is photoshopped in some way. It's either touched up, lightened, darkened.
Sure.
They probably should have used the real picture, which I have, of Rubio and President Obama shaking hands and grinning from ear to ear, instead of photoshopping that one, which looked very fake, and they thought it looked so fake it was okay. But to make that an issue and not the issue of trade and the trade vote was just a way to deflect. And unfortunately, it stuck in South Carolina, and some voters did not go with Cruz. But anyway, I have not seen any evidence of him blatantly lying or misinterpreting the truth.
Okay. All right. Well, that sounds that is good, since you were working very closely with him, particularly last week. Now, are you going to be out stumping for him in any other states, Jeff?
We're available if they need us to.
Okay.
I don't know. We haven't gotten contacted and asked directly. He's got a lot of other House members that have endorsed him, especially true conservatives that I serve with in the House, like Raul Labrador and Tim Hulskamp and many, many others. So there's opportunities for those guys in their home states or adjoining states to get involved.
Correct. One last question on this, and then I want to move on as far as some of the other things we want to talk about. Has anybody in the Senate endorsed him? Because that seems to be a question that keeps coming up, and you just brought up that in the House they certainly have.
Yeah, I mean, because he told the he's doing exactly what he told the voters in Texas he would do. He's gone up to Washington to really try to repeal Obamacare and use every tool in our toolbox. I think he's really brought sunlight to the Senate and shown some failures on the part of Republican, now Republican-controlled Senate, but Republicans in the Senate in the past, to not truly stand up and do what they told the voters they would do, whether it was Obamacare or standing up at the opportunity to defend life and not fund Planned Parenthood, not defund Planned Parenthood. So, you know, they don't like him because he's really kind of exposed them for not standing up. Cruz is a real fighter. This guy's principled. He's got backbone. He's willing to fight not only Barack Obama and Harry Reid, Nancy Pelosi, but also fight even with members of his own Republican caucus to do what's right and do what they told the American taxpayers they would do.
That's right. And, of course, because you and others didn't sit down, you now have a new Speaker of the House there in the House with Ryan.
Yeah, and, you know, we see some changes. And it's really, you look at the polls for Donald Trump, there's a lot of voter anger out there because of those same things that that Ted Cruz was fighting against. People are fed up with Washington. I've said it often that this year they're voting with their middle finger. And the middle finger's pointed toward Washington for the failures to do what we told. Let's just use the pledge to America, and I've talked about that before. That was a pledge that House Republicans put out there. I wasn't in the House at that point in time. We were trying to take the gavel out of Nancy Pelosi's hand. They said we would repeal Obamacare. Haven't done it. Didn't even fight real hard when we had the funding sources to kill that. And then they said we would post every bill online for 3 days to allow the American public to actually get engaged and read the bills and actually have congressmen read the bills. Violated that. And then after we violated it over and over. They said we'd cut $100 billion, actual money, $100 billion out of spending the first year and do it in such a way that we protected seniors, the military, and veterans. Well, we didn't do that. And then the only cuts that we really saw came about as a result of the sequester. And sequestration was across-the-board spending cuts that actually did hurt veterans, seniors, and the military. So America sees right through all this. They're upset with Washington and the failures. That's why you see a guy like Donald Trump tap into that anger and actually rise in the polls. But the truth be told, Ted Cruz has been fighting for exactly those things that the American people are frustrated over. He's been fighting alongside them. I know, because I was there. I saw it. I was in the meetings, and he has done exactly what he told the voters in Texas he would do, and I applaud him for that.
Well, I applaud anybody that stands up in Washington, D.C., because you're right. The angst that everybody feels is because we haven't seen any movement out of Washington, D.C., so that is part of the biggest problems that we're having because we don't have the movement out of Washington, D.C., So,
that's correct.
Yeah, how do you feel that, real quick, how do you feel Paul Ryan's doing up there?
You know, I trust Paul. I think he's an honest broker. I think he was dealt a pretty crappy hand when John Boehner left Congress and actually pushed through the BBA or the spending bill that actually raised the nation's debt ceiling and set a higher spending level. Paul inherited that. He voted for it. I was disappointed in him voting for that. But Boehner was trying to do some things to get some things out of the way, like a debt ceiling increase, and do it in such a way that appealed to him, where we've been fighting a debt ceiling increase, and we've definitely been fighting a debt ceiling increase without any kind of reform, structural reforms to actually the programs that are driving our deficit spending and our debt. So Paul inherited some kind of crappy situations. But all along, I felt, and I still feel like, Paul has this vision of returning us to regular order, knowing that regular order up here means that we actually pass a budget and we start passing appropriations bills. It gives general members of Congress an opportunity to have impact and input on federal spending, directing federal spending or ending federal spending or programmatic language, and not earmarks, but just I may not want the Department of Energy to spend money in this area, but still spend money, but spend it in a different way that's more effective for energy independence versus giving money to Slender or something like that. So regular order is actually what we should get back to, especially on the appropriations process. I think Paul understands that our caucus should be a bottom-up driven organization, not a top-down. He has been very inclusive from the 5 years I've been here. He's been very inclusive in writing a budget. He's been very inclusive in tax policy. And he has been inclusive with, since he's been speaker, with members of even the Freedom Caucus that to start talking about how we move forward. Whereas before, we just had it handed to us on a menu, and this is what we had to do. Paul Ryan's been very inclusive. So we'll see. I mean, the jury's still out for him, Ann.
Yeah.
But I have hope that he understands the frustration of the problems here in D.C., and he's doing it, albeit incrementally, to try to change some of that. But like I said, the proof will be in the pudding.
Absolutely. You know, one of the things that gave me a little hope about things was that John Culberson on the Appropriations Subcommittee was able to get Attorney General Lynch to confirm that they're going to do some new policies with sanctuary cities. That is amazing.
Yeah. We've had the opportunity to change a lot of things with regard to sanctuary cities, with regard to pushing back against the president's unconstitutional illegal action on amnesty. We've had a chance through the appropriations process, the CRs and omnibuses, to defund Planned Parenthood, to start pushing back against Obamacare, and we just seem to fail to do that.
Correct.
That is something Paul Ryan has heard loud and clear from not only us, but the American people after the omnibus. So we'll see how well he listens and how well he's willing to implement what he hears from the American people.
Sure. But, I mean, to hear that now that the prisoners are, when illegals are released from jail, that they're just not going to go back into the cities, that then now they'll be sent to ICE. That was a big accomplishment, wasn't it? With the fact that they are going back rather than just being released into these sanctuary cities. I thought that was a pretty big step for Congress up there.
Yeah, but, you know, you could do all this.
Right.
But if the president doesn't enforce that side of it, then nothing really happens. And Barack Obama has been very clear. He likes sanctuary cities. He doesn't mind releasing criminals back into the population. If they're here illegally, and even if they've got a criminal background.
Yeah.
So whether they go to a sanctuary city, whether they go back to their home country, whether they're released into the country, in the interior of the heartland, that has been his modus operandi.
Yeah.
We'll just see. I'm concerned that, you know, President Obama only has about 10 and a half months left. will he follow the intent of Congress on that issue?
Yeah.
And then there's another issue that I confronted John Kerry about yesterday in Foreign Affairs Committee. Because in December, we passed a visa waiver program and terrorist travel act, which would stop the ability for terrorists to travel around the country, so around the world so easily, and to try to stop them from coming here. And during those negotiations, the State Department wanted some exceptions for foreign travelers in the visa waiver countries that travel to Iraq, Syria, Iran, or Sudan and have traveled to those countries since 2011 to be able to apply for and obtain a visa waiver so that they can come to this country. We said no. The emails are very clear that during the negotiations, we said no, and we stopped it. Well, right after the bill was signed by the president, the ink wasn't even dry, and before the State Department had a white paper, is what I call it, determining how they could go around Congress, in my opinion. If you read the white paper, you would come to that same conclusion, go around Congress to actually allow individuals in those countries that have traveled to Iran to apply for a visa waiver and come to this country. So it looked like, and the video will be on YouTube hopefully today, but it was a great back and forth debate with John Kerry over that issue, where he wasn't as well informed about what his agency has done as he should be. And he knew I got him on that. It doesn't show on camera, But at the end of the debate, I was the very last congressman to confront him and ask him questions during that hearing. He winked at me and smiled because he knew I had him. He knew I had him. So hopefully folks will look at that and see this is another example of where the administration circumvents the law, goes around the intent and the letter of the law of Congress to do what they want to do. Now we're watching it on Gitmo.
Well, exactly.
And there's a speech I gave last night. I'm pushing H.R. 617, which gives House legal standing authority to sue the president or any of the administration officials and get an injunction in place if they try to bring the Gitmo terrorist to United States soil. We specifically don't want them in South Carolina. But regardless of wherever, whether it's Texas or Kansas or Colorado or South Carolina, those states shouldn't be a dumping ground for terrorists for this administration.
And do you think you'll be able to get that resolution passed?
Well, if the House wants to have legal standing, the ability to sue the president, that resolution is one that does it. Now, I know how things operate up here. We'll see if it has Jeff Duncan's name on it when it comes to the floor or someone else's name. But if you don't care who takes credit, you can get more done. I just want to make sure we have the tools with the ability to go at the president and stop this. Because and the NDAA, which he signed, is very, very clear. It is against the law to bring Gitmo terrorists to U.S. soil. And if he does that, he's in violation of the law.
Well, haven't we seen with all his executive orders a lot of things that he's really done that are against the law?
You know, that's up to interpretation. I think he's violated a constitutional separation of powers.
Okay.
Now, whether he's actually gone against an existing statute that would be against the law, a law passed by Congress and signed by an executive, I don't know. I know he has not enforced the law. I do know that he circumvented Congress, the separation of powers, and actually created law with the executive memo on amnesty that we tried to fight about this time last year. But whether he's broken the law is subject to interpretation on what those executives do or do not do. So I just hope we can survive in the next 10 months.
Well, it's the next 10 months, and who is going to be the next president of the United States, isn't it, Jeff?
Well, I tell you what, if it's Hillary Clinton or Bernie Sanders, a dishonest woman who has really revealed a lot of classified and top-secret information through her unsecured server and made that available to anybody that wanted to hack that, it's beyond me that anyone would vote for her. And she's just been dishonest all along.
And
but then
yet,
you also have Bernie Sanders running in that party, who is a proclaimed socialist, who, if you think Obamacare is redistribution of the wealth, wait until a Bernie Sanders policies get in there. It will be true redistribution of the wealth, which is socialism, which you don't want. And so the fact that those two are the front runners for the Democratic nomination is beyond me. I don't think Hillary Clinton makes it to the convention or the nomination personally.
Well, she's projected to be winning here in South Carolina.
Yeah, and that amazes me. I think the question that South Carolinians ought to ask those two is, do they support bringing Gitmo terrorists to South Carolina? Because South Carolina is one of the states that's been targeted to house the Gitmo terrorists. Do they support bringing them to South Carolina? And if they do, I don't think you should vote for them, because we don't want them here.
Well, you know, I think a lot of people say, well, what's so bad? We might as well be housing them. I think what a lot of people had not thought about was the fact that it just opens up the possibility of attacks on that city, that town, that place, because they are located right there.
That's right. I mean, think about the possibility of a huge attack to try to release them and help them escape. The town itself could be targeted just for an act of terror just because. Then if you bring them to U.S. soil, what sort of constitutional rights might they be afforded? That's a constitutional debate for legal scholars that are above me and their understanding of when those constitutional liberties are bestowed on foreigners. But we've got a place for them. It's called Guantanamo Bay, a prison that was built for them. I was down there in 2011. They were building a courtroom so they could have military tribunals. One thing that I question is, why haven't they had the military tribunals? I'm going to look into that today, because through Facebook, that's one of the questions that I've been asked, and I can't answer. Because I remember going down there and seeing the courtroom, seeing the facilities where they can meet with their legal counsel. Why haven't they had a military tribunal? But what we've seen out of this administration is a lot of releases of Gitmo terrorists who have returned to the battlefield. 30% have gone back into terrorism. That's not a healthy mix for American safety and American national and security interests.
Absolutely not. And, you know, I even know of a JAG officer that was sent down there to start doing some of that prosecuting.
Yeah.
And I don't think anything happened.
No. And they built the courtroom, but why haven't we had the tribunals? And I want to answer that question. I hope to put the answer on Facebook when I find out. There might be a very valid, justified reason. I just don't know it. I know we built the facilities. I know they were gearing up for that in 2011, and it never happened.
Now, what do you think about, moving on, what do you think about the fact that the Senate has said that if President Obama puts up a new Supreme Court judge nominee, that they will not take it up? What do you think is going to happen if he brings up someone? He has already started, so what do you think?
Well, on Justice Scalia's seat, I don't think he needs to nominate anybody because it's not going anywhere. I had a meeting with Mitch McConnell on, I think, Monday night. And think about this. I guess it's Tuesday night. Think about this. The majority leader of the United States Senate traveled from the hallowed halls of the Senate. This wasn't just a regular senator. This was the majority leader.
Correct.
Traveled over to the House side, over to a private office of one of the congressmen to meet with a small group of us that are on the board of the Freedom Caucus. There were eight of us in the room, I believe. He came over to meet with us. He didn't summon us to come over there, and there's generally this perception of the Senate being the upper chamber and the House being the lower chamber. The majority leader of the Senate came over to meet with us, and he sat there in the room with us for about an hour. And one of the issues he brought up was he is not going to do anything on a Obama a nominee for the Supreme Court in the United States Senate. They're not even going to have a Judiciary Committee hearing. They're not going to have a vote there. They're not going to have a vote on the floor of the Senate, because there's 80 years of precedence not to do that in the lame duck session of the presidency, the lame duck year.
Mm-hmm.
And there's even record, and two wrongs don't make a right. I think this is something we probably need to come to some sort of resolution on going forward. But there's plenty of video evidence and speeches and other things from both Harry Reid, Chuck Schumer, and even, wait for it, Barack Hussein Obama, Senator Obama, on the Senate floor, giving a speech saying we should not confirm nominations for the Supreme Court during a lame duck year of the president. So, in his own words, we shouldn't do that. But now that he has the ability and he's the president, he wants to do it, really? So, no. We're going to stand on the past precedent. We're going to stand on past statements of the other party, and even our party. We've said that, too, in the past. So that's sort of where we are. The next president, we're 7 years and 2 months into the presidency, in the last year of Barack Obama's term, and the next president may be there for 4 or 8 years. They should have the ability to appoint a Supreme Court justice. He's had the ability to appoint two during his term. So I think that's what makes America great, is that we have a normal transition of power from one party to the next, or one president to the next. A president's willing to give up that power and orderly transfer it to someone else who has the opportunity to impose their ideas and visions and goals and business plans or whatever for the nation. That's what makes America great.
I think that's, yes, that's one of the things. But this is WCRS right here in Greenwood. But Jeff, isn't it really a question? What would be your feeling? What would be your feeling if Donald Trump secured the nomination?
You know, if that's what the voters choose, I will work with him and try to make sure that we do what's right for America. There is still separation of powers, and we can't continue to allow, even if it's a Republican president, we can't allow them to erode the separation of powers like Barack Obama has tried to do. So if that's who the voters choose, we'll get behind him and we'll work. There are others that say they'll stay at home. I don't have the luxury of that, being a United States congressman. If he is the president, he's in my party, we're going to have to figure out a way to work to move the country forward. And I'm going to have to figure out a way to influence that person in the White House from a very conservative standpoint that believes in the Constitution and individual liberty and more power to the states. And this huge federal government's got to stop, and we've got to end the regulatory red tape and the taxation. I will continue working on those things to try to influence the White House along those lines. I don't have the luxury of just staying at home. So whoever it is, I can tell you, Ann, Jeff Duncan's going to stand with that Republican president, and we're going to try to do what's right for the Republican conservative base that elected us, but also what's right for the nation to move forward and get out of this doldrum of the Obama economy, and start rolling back big government and unleashing and unbridling that innovative and entrepreneurial spirit to help Americans create jobs. That's what makes America great.
Well, Congressman Jeff Duncan, it is always so great to talk to you. I guess you're up for re-election again, aren't you?
Yeah, I'm actually in my office. I really probably don't need to talk about that, Ann.
Okay.
I am running for re-election, but I don't think I can ask for any votes or anything like that. So I'm just going to talk to you another time about that. But
okay.
I am up on the ballot in November, and and filing will be in March. So.
Okay. Well, I just wanted to I just wanted you to confirm or deny. That's all, Jeff.
I'm running for re-election. Let me just say that I am running for re-election. So.
Well, we'll look forward to talking to you a whole lot more. And thanks so much for calling us this morning. You know, we really appreciate you calling in here, Jeff.
Well, I love Ann. You take care.
All right. Thank you.
Right.
Bye-bye.
God bless. Bye-bye.